Welcome to the Football Game Plan Radio Network, where football makes sense. This is our Draft Prospect Analysis Show. I'm your host, Chris James, Senior Draft Analyst over here at Football Game Plan. And we have a great show planned for you this week, folks. What I've been doing is assessing each of the positions for the upcoming 2015 NFL Draft. And I've been giving my rankings, you know, comparisons, strengths, weaknesses, also fits of where I think that they might be most successful on the next level at their specific position. So I've been doing that. I've done the quarterbacks, running backs, receivers. Last week I ran out of time. So I'm going to do the receivers and the tight end position today. And then I'm going to release version 2 of my mock draft for the NFL, this upcoming NFL draft. I only do the first round, and I do at least one pick or the first pick available for a given team. So Buffalo does not have a first-round pick this year. Buffalo's first pick at this point is in the second round. I think it's 50th overall. I will give that pick as well. So we're going to also run through some news and notes. A couple of different things have happened. Guys have been franchised. Guys have been released. A lot of activity around the NFL, a lot of things going on, and no better place to start than in the location with the fans who, look, they threw batteries and snowballs at Santa Claus, okay? The fan base there, and this is Philadelphia, by the way, you know, to say they're passionate and sometimes a little angry is an understatement. So when there's been a lot of movement by a guy named Chip Kelly and the brass of the Philadelphia Eagles. The fans are going to let you know what they think. And one of the big moves made this week was the trade of one Shady McCoy, LeSean McCoy, for Kiko Alonso. Now, I have friends who are Philadelphia fans, you know. I've seen Twitter and all sorts of social media and people going to buzz about it. And Bills fans, noticeably more excited than Eagles fans from what I've seen. Eagles fans seem to feel like the organization is not concerned with their well-being at this point because they're getting rid of fan favorites. I mean, Trent Cole eliminated. Fan favorite, though. And pretty productive player over his career. And LeSean McCoy. I mean, LeSean McCoy was considered, with Adrian Peterson out, one of the best backs in the game. Possibly the top back. So, my opinion of this trade, on the face of it, it looks like Buffalo won out. They get LeSean McCoy, a guy who is a versatile player, who can lose you in a phone booth with a straitjacket on. And they trade away Kiko Alonso, a guy who didn't play for him due to ACL injury. And they lose a guy who didn't even, this year at least, contribute to top run defense in the NFL. So it looks like, hey, we lost out on something we didn't have even last year. And gained something we didn't have at all last year, which was a running back that we can depend on. Now, before people out there think that I'm saying C.J. Spiller is not a good back, I just think that the Bills organization felt like they couldn't depend on him. That's the reason that you don't see other organizations making their lead back their kick return man. Maybe punt returns once in a while, but not the kickoff return. That's designated for a guy who is, not to be offensive, but replaceable. So they didn't feel like they had the consistency at that position. Well, now you get LeSean McCoy, and he's going to come in and he's going to work with what Rex Ryan wants to do. And the Eagles, like I said, the fans, they think they kind of got shafted. Well, let me explain something to you Eagles fans. You have to understand where you are and what you are. Okay? Where you are. Your Eagles organization has come close to winning the Super Bowl once since 1981 or two, whatever it was. And that was when Donovan McNabb and company, Terrell Owens, played against the Patriots. They've lost in NFC Championship games, and to be honest, generally, the Eagles are a disappointing team. In 2 years, Chip Kelly has gone 10-6. He's gone to the playoffs once, and due to what I'm going to deem as just overtly conservative quarterback play by Nick Foles against the Saints, due to that, you didn't win a playoff game at home. So, Chip Kelly's one of those guys, and yeah, he's... I'll say like this. Chip Kelly's not the guy that I would hang out with given the opportunity because he has a certain personality. But he's good at his job. And he believes in his system more than he believes in people who challenge his system. Hey, you know? A lot of people who want to be great or even will be great, especially those who will be great, face challenges. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to be great. I don't know. But it seems like he is doing something, building something. I have to give credit where credit is due for the guy doing what he did at Oregon. People were like, oh, he didn't win anything. Did play in the national championship game. Oh, well, he hasn't done anything in the NFL. I've seen coaches come in and go 3-13 with talent. 4-12, 5-11, winning games. So, from a strictly situational outlook on the trade, he didn't want a guy who doesn't fit his bill. I'd rather what happened in this particular trade happen like it did than what happened with DeSean Jackson. It seemed like there was more, they didn't need to release those details. They just need to say he didn't fit with our organization, not gang ties and this and that. That seemed like a character shot. With Shady McCoy, it seems like they just didn't work out together. What Shady McCoy offered wasn't what Chip Kelly wanted. Number two, money situation. So the Eagles have nothing but cap room right now, as far as I know. I think that they have, I might get this wrong, $50 million in cap room? That's a lot. I think McCoy was due $11.5 million for a cap hit this year. That's also a lot. I'm just wondering if the release of Trent Cole, who's 32, only 6.5 sacks this year after having, I think, like 13 the year prior. I'm wondering if these are moves made so that they can make big splashes where they feel they need to. And some of those big splashes, I don't think it's going to be mine. I think that it's going to be more along the offensive front. And they're going to probably try to move some pieces to get Marcus Mariota. You can say that I'm crazy, but if Mariota falls to 6, I think there might be a deal done with the Jets. He fits very well with what they want to do. As far as when rookies come in, you can tell a success level of a guy by how well he fits into a system and a scheme immediately. I think that Ryan Tannehill has been as successful as he's been because he had been playing in that system for 3 years prior to even getting there and stepping foot on the field. Same thing with Mariota. If he goes in and he has the same exact offense as he's been running since he was 17 years old, fresh out of Hawaii, he's probably going to do a pretty good job. So I think that this guy, Chip Kelly, is trying to put his stamp on this team and the NFL. And I'd rather take a chance on a guy in Chip Kelly who's putting his stamp on, going 10-6, looking like a team that is on the cusp and the verge, you know, than a guy like, let's say, Greg Schiano. I use him because I live here in Tampa and I saw what the city and organization went through, or at least the city went through with Schiano here, who had some antics that made virtually no sense. I kind of understand why the Shady McCoy deal was made way more than some of the stuff that Schiano did. I think in the long run, it might be a good move for Philadelphia. even though it doesn't seem like it right now. It seems like they're just throwing stuff away. I doubt that anyone ever who works for an organization, ever, not the owner. The owner tries to make money. I think that the personnel tries to win. So I think that Chip Kelly's doing what he thinks is necessary to get over the hump to win. Okay? So let's see if I'm right, and let's see how this deal works out. I think that for both parties, it's going to work out pretty well. Buffalo got the better end of the deal immediately, but I think in the long run, both teams will be pretty successful with this particular transaction. And speaking of Marcus Mariota, he's scheduled to come to Tampa in April, but this March, a guy who visited the Tampa Bay Buccaneers management and spoke with ownership and management was one Jameis Winston. So there's been conversation had locally about Jameis Winston and the success level and how things are going to work out and should he be drafted as the first pick and, you know, all this stuff. I will say this immediately so people are aware of it. By no means am I a fan of Jameis Winston as a package because of a couple of things. One is very bias-filled, but I'm more honest than some. He went to Florida State. I have to deal with Florida State fans who are irrational, and if you're in an area of the country where you have to deal with whatever fan, if it's Ohio State, if it's Wisconsin, I don't care. I've had to deal with irrational, ridiculous commentary from people, which has made me have a dislike, much like some had a dislike for Tim Tebow. You can say it's different, but I'm talking about the fan base, not what the player's done. Tebow was generally more of a guy who, you know, went out and did things in the community, whatever, whatever, and Jameis Winston's been in the news for his transgressions or whatnot. I'm talking about the fan bases. So I've developed a bias from that respect. Number two is, I don't like some of the stuff that he's done because it seems stupid. Not by any means saying that I'm going to persecute him. Some people think, oh, he's a horrible person. I think that he's an idiot from the standpoint of making decisions. He's got to get better with that. You got to make better choices, period. Not a dumb guy by any means. I think he's a very intelligent person. He just makes poor choices. And the third thing is, I try to judge strictly on what I see from a football standpoint because I don't get the opportunity to interview or speak with or have background information on a personal level other than what I read a lot of these young men. Some guys I have interviews with, I talk with, whatnot, I learn a little bit more about them, but I have no clue what Jameis Winston has going on in his head, and especially don't have even the depth that some other people have. So I have to judge Jameis Winston just like Jeremy Hill last year and anyone else that I'm judging on football production and what I see on the field. That's the only depth of feel that I have for these young men other than some that I'm, you know, privileged enough to have interviews with, sit down with, or have phone interviews with or have them on the show. So, you know, same thing I said about Jeremy Hill last year. He made a lot of poor choices and had more criminal activity than Jameis Winston. Jeremy Hill for 1 year has been okay. You've heard nothing bad about him so far. And I judge him on football talent. I said by far he's the best back in his class. He's my number one overall running back last year. And we saw what he did this past season. He balled out. I think similarly about Jameis Winston. I think that Jameis Winston is a heck of a football player from a quarterbacking standpoint. I think at age and at point in career, because people when they hear this go, you're stupid. Well, that's fine. You can think I'm stupid. I honestly, while it might frustrate me at the moment, I can give two craps about you after I walk away from you and never have to see you again until the next time I do have to. I think Jameis Winston is the cleanest prospect that I've seen in my 7 to 8 years of really judging talent. Now, that means from a quarterbacking standpoint on the field. I don't mean that he makes all the right reads. I mean as a complete package of what I see on the field that is offered, he is the best quarterback. He is better than Andrew Luck. He is better than Teddy Bridgewater. At this stage, third year in college, at the end of a third year in college. Andrew Luck was still making the mistake of throwing late to the corner route or the crossing route at 8 yards depth on that play that everyone loves to talk about from John Gruden, Spider 2 Y Banana. Struggled with it. So if you go watch the film, at that point in career, 3 years in college, Andrew Luck still struggling with something that Jameis Winston got above as a freshman. Second year in college, redshirt freshman. Similarly with Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater didn't go over the hump until his 10th game. I think it was either 10th or 11th game of his college career against UCF or whatever. Yeah. I think it was UCF. His sophomore year. His second year. Because his first year, he had putrid numbers. I think it was like 12 touchdowns, 7 picks or something like that. At this point, I think that he's ahead of them. Now, the worry that I have, I don't have many worries about his on-the-field play. You know, the long windup that they want to talk about. Unless your left tackle refuses to block, unless he's a turnstile like some people who I'm not going to mention names of, your long delivery is not going to matter as much if you have active feet or able to move up in the pocket and make quick choices. Remember, Peyton Manning has a pea shooter for an arm, and for some reason, he's able to get the ball completed because he makes good choices, good decisions, and they're fairly quick. So, from what I've seen, Jameis Winston is what we need in Tampa Bay as a quarterback. Now, if they took Mariota, I have no problems with Marcus Mariota. In fact, I think that Marcus Mariota, I give him more credit than some do, because I think that he is discredited for not in his control. You see, one of the things that I find funny about people is that they try to use some positives for people they like as negatives for people they don't. I despise that. That is one of my pet peeves. It is what it is. So if this guy, if you have a problem with running quarterbacks, you can't use or mobile, whatever description, you can't use that as a positive for one guy and a negative for another unless you're saying something that's relevant. This guy takes off and runs before he goes through his reads. Valid negative compared to this guy who takes off and runs once the reads have been accurately assessed and he sees that this is the best option. I can take that. What I can't take is Mariota works in a gimmicky scheme, so that's why he had success. But you backtrack 4 years when Cam Newton was coming out, and the same people are defending Cam Newton for being in a gimmicky offense. Guess what? Winners are winners, and guys who play are guys who play. Cam Newton, to me, has a little bit more of that extra than Marcus Mariota does, but that extra, that winner's mentality that Marcus Mariota might be lacking behind Cam Newton, his polish to his game is ahead of Cam Newton's. So to me, it almost balances out. What I'm saying here is I'm fine with Marcus Mariota. I don't have an issue with him being able to drop back from under center because that's just a stupid argument. He can't drop back from under center. A 5-year-old can drop back from under center unless he's got goofy feet. Now, you can say that he might not make as quick a reads when he has to work on, like, concentrate on his footwork. Okay. Maybe. Why would you then select him to play in that style of offense? I'll give you a statistic, and it's not going to be accurate, but it's going to be more accurate than I'm giving myself credit for. The amount of snaps that Peyton Manning and Tom Brady took from under center last year was under 15%. I'm willing to put money on it that it was under 20%. I'm going to say under 15%. So that means that it, at worst or at best, whatever you want to categorize it as, the amount of snaps that Peyton Manning and the other than victory formation kneel downs took from the shotgun formation was well above 80%. So this whole stupid argument of you have to play from under center, if that's the offense that you played in and that's the offense that's offered by a coach, that's fine. It's like a why would you select a guy that doesn't do something? That's like, hey, I'm going to go draft a running back to play my quarterback position because if he doesn't get in, if he doesn't have to throw the ball, if he just runs around, he can get yardage. The dumbest thing I've ever heard. Why would you select a guy who is more mobile and doesn't have certain skill sets to play something exactly opposite of their strengths? I'm getting off subject. I'm just very frustrated by some things. And this whole thing of Mariota can't play because he operates out of the shotgun is just silly. Same thing as saying Jameis Winston makes bad reads. Of course, he's a quarterback. Every quarterback makes bad reads. Consistency of bad reads and also getting rattled in pressure situations, that's something a little different. And I'll give Winston this. While I might not be a huge fan of it, he is really, really good when it's pressure time. So that's why he's the number one quarterback. That's why since the beginning of the season when I had Mariota number one and Winston two, I flip-flopped those two because I saw Winston prove it when he didn't have an elite team this year like he did in 2013. All right, folks. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go through the receiver position. Remember, I started last week. I got through a few guys. I'm going to give you a recap of them. It's going to be really quick, the recap. And then I'll give you the guys where I stopped in the rankings. So my number one overall wide receiver was Amari Cooper from Alabama. My number two guy was Kevin White from West Virginia. Number three was Devontae Parker from Louisville. Number four was Jalen Strong from Arizona State. My number four guy was Devin Funchess from Michigan. Number six, Sammy Coates from Auburn. Number seven, Justin Hardy from East Carolina. All right, we have a caller on the line. Caller, where you're from and what's your name?
Oh, hi. I'm Josh. I'm from Georgia. I just wanted to know, what's your take on people in the media who keep saying that the running back position is devalued in some way, shape, or form? Because I keep hearing that a lot, and it kind of makes no sense. I just want to know what your take on it was.
And that's a great question, Josh. Glad you were able to call in to the show. This whole myth of the running back position being devalued, if you want to say that running backs are being selected later in the draft than they were in the past, that's one statement. But we've seen teams with poor running backs aren't going to win. We saw that the Indianapolis Colts, who honestly could have won virtually every game this year if they had more consistency at that position, they would be a more valid team. The commentary of it being devalued, I think, is just silly. It's an important position. It is what gives quarterbacks the opportunity to have less pressure on them. The threat of a running back running the ball on play action, getting the ball in the screen game, and just being a dominant force, period. So it's silly to say that they're devalued. They've been going later in the draft than they did in the past, but they're definitely not devalued in my point of view of that particular position.
Okay, good, because it's just kind of frustrating to see how you see talented guys, because I thought Jeremy Hill should have went like in the top 32 last year, but it was frustrating to see him go low. I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so you can understand my frustration of not having a good running back on my team. So, yeah, it's just kind of frustrating to see that happen, to see these young men keep getting the opportunity taken away from them just because they're somehow devalued.
Right, and I agree with you. It's one of those things where there is some mindset by some folks that you can get any guy off the street to come in because they've seen the success of a guy like, let's say, Arian Foster, who was undrafted. Well, it wasn't because he wasn't a pretty good back. It's because you missed. If a guy has first-round talent, like I personally assessed Jeremy Hill did last year, I have no problems with them being taken in the first round. I mean, that's just – it makes sense. I mean, I think in my mocks, I generally have, if a running back's a first-round talent and a team needs a running back, I'm taking them there. So I'd rather take a running back who is a guy who's a smart guy who's going to be successful on the next level than take a chance on some guy who had a great combine who has no production on film at the DN position or corner or whatever.
Right. Okay. Well, I just wanted to know. Thanks, Chris. I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And that's why I do it. I do it for people who have a love for football.
Okay, because football is like my favorite sport. It's just kind of good to hear other people besides the talking heads that you hear all the time just say the same stuff over and over again, and you can't have an opposite voice trying to tell them right.
Definitely understand where you're coming from. Well, thank you for calling the show. Keep listening and call in anytime. We welcome the commentary.
Okay, thanks.
All right, a great question there. We actually wrote a book, came out this past July. It's called Stiff Arming Football Myths, Debunking 50 of the Greatest Fairy Tales in Football. And one of the topics was the running back position has been devalued. When something gets rolling and something gets going like a little train and it becomes that's kind of what same thing when I hear people say, oh, you can just put any bad offensive tackle a guard. If you're a bad offensive, you're probably a bad guard. I mean, if you were a guy who's playing out of position at offensive tackle and you're playing guard, that's a little different. Same with running back. Running backs are going in the draft. There's been more emphasis put on the quarterback position, a left tackle, a rush end, so a right defensive end, really, or a corner who's a quote-unquote lockdown corner. You shouldn't stretch for a running back, much like you shouldn't stretch for a quarterback, in my opinion, personally. I'd rather pick a guy who has the first-round talent. If it's someone sitting there with first-round talent, and I'm in the first round, I'm taking that. As far as the position. And then I'll wait to get a quarterback in the third round, fourth round. I mean, the thought process that you can't win without a quarterback that goes late is silly. I mean, two Super Bowl winners went in the third and sixth round, respectively. So if it's a guy with special talent, and it doesn't mean Adrian Peterson because there's one of those every 10, 15 years or whatever, one of those guys who can't miss, a Herschel Walker, Bo Jackson. I mean a guy who clearly is better than the competition. Jeremy Hill was a good example. I don't understand why that guy has to wait till pick number 60 to go. So we're on the receivers. We got to number 7, Justin Hardy. He's my 7th-ranked receiver. Number 8 was Nelson Aguilar out of USC. A guy who has slipped a lot with some people. I'm going to keep him high because I think he's a heck of a player. Ty Montgomery was my number 9 wide receiver in the country this year. Vince Mayo is the number 10 guy out of Washington State. Number 11 was Devin Smith out of Ohio State. 12 was Rashad Green out of FSU. Remember, he was, I think, preseason number 6 or 7. And some guys have just proven to be a little bit better this year. My number 8 guy. All right, number 13 guy was Trey McBride out of William & Mary. Big fan of this guy ever since I got introduced to his game. My number 14 guy is Doriel Green Beckham. Talent, but I don't see the polish that's necessary to be a top flight receiver. Number 15 guy is Jamison Crowder. Number 16 guy was Tyler Lockett. 17, Stephon Diggs. 18, Josh Harper out of Fresno State. Number 19 is Philip Dorsett out of Miami. 20 was Desmond Lewis out of Central Arkansas. A good prospect who will probably end up going in that third round range. Number 21 was Tony Lippett out of Michigan State. 22, Deontay Greenberry out of Houston. 23 was Rashad Perryman out of UCF. 24 was Adrian Coxon out of Stony Brook. Actually, Turin just did an interview with him, and we posted it, I think it was done a couple of days ago, with Adrian Coxon. So check that out. We have it available on the website and the draft area. You can also go to our YouTube page and check out any of those videos. Good interview, a lot of good information. We like to not only talk about football with these guys, but also talk about life in general, things they want you to know about themselves, because they are individuals off the field. Number 25 was Sam Ajayi out of Fordham, one of the Fordham four that Emory did a special on. Heck of a wide receiver. I like this guy. I'm a fan of his game. Number 26 was Dris Anderson out of Utah. A burner more than anything else. Really a guy who can be a game changer, but more of a number four receiver in some in a lot of packages. Number 27 guy is DeAndre White out of Alabama. Well, now we get to the guys that I hadn't gone over in last week's show. Number 28 guy is Titus Davis out of Central Michigan. 6'2", 195-pound senior. I didn't really see a comparison. Emory brought one up that I actually liked, and that was of Nate Washington. Guy's got some explosiveness to him. Inconsistent pass catcher. Actually kind of leaves his feet sometimes to catch a ball, which is a problem that hopefully he can get rid of. You don't want to do that. Like I said, the strengths, that explosiveness, the ability to get up and down the field and actually force you to have to roll coverage once in a while. But the negative is the consistency with catching the passes and catching the ball. Also, like I said, sometimes leaves his feet to make catches when it's not necessary. My number 29 guy is more of an athlete, but I think that his upside really does swing. And I actually liked what he did when offered the opportunity to play receiver. Has some natural ability more than anything else. And that's Devin Gardner out of Michigan. One of the things about Devin Gardner, you know he's going to be a joker. He can probably return kicks for you, do some package plays, you know, things that they used Antoine Randle-L for in Pittsburgh. And when I saw his game, because of the style of run that he has, a high run, high kick, did remind me of Ted Ginn Jr., a guy who would be a quality number four receiver, helping out in special team situations, return game, things like that. People will say, well, why rank a person who's going to be a fourth option on a team? Because that fourth option might win you a Super Bowl. Think about it. The guy who just – the two best players as far as jumped off the screen for you in the Super Bowl were guys who worked at Foot Locker and Popeyes. And they were the number four guy on their depth chart at receiver and corner. Those guys can win you games. So you have to get guys that if it fits and that's the position where they can be the most successful, that's what you want. Not everyone's going to be an X receiver. Not everyone's going to be your Calvin Johnson. Some guys are going to be fill guys, but you want a good player at every position if possible, especially one that fits where you want to put them. My number 30 guy is Antoine Goodley out of Baylor. I like this kid's game because he plays with some tenacity. He's a tough player. More stoutly built like a running back. Strength is that he's going to be tough. He's going to take on people if necessary. Doesn't shy away from contact. That's a positive. Weakness. I think his game lacks polish, but it's not. It's fully developed. It's his game now. I don't think that he has room for growth. Like, let's say Devin Gardner, room for growth at the position. I don't think Goodley has much room for growth at this position. I think he's pretty maxed out. Because of this, he reminds me of Dwayne Harris from the Cowboys, a guy who's tough. He's going to go in there. He's going to return kicks for you. He's going to be a good number four option, which I think that's the future for this guy. But they don't have the polish of their routes. I mean, they're more natural athletes than they are natural receivers. And it's not an insult. I want a dog on my team. I want a guy who wants to win and will go get the ball and go do what's necessary. I think the Cowboys agree with me when they have a guy like Dwayne Harris. A team that gets Antoine Goodley have a guy who's got that same tenacity for the game. That's a great thing. Darren Waller is my number 31 guy out of Georgia Tech. Big body guy, about 6'5", 240 pounds. He's a seventh-round pick, in my opinion. He seems It's not disinterested by any means. He kind of floats through his routes, floats through everything. And with that, he's not defined enough with what he's going to do with decision-making. I think that that kind of weighs on the quarterback as well. He doesn't get to the point sometimes. When he is in the vicinity of the ball, he makes some spectacular catches. Because of this combination, he reminds me of Malcolm Floyd from the Chargers. I think that he has the opportunity to be a Z receiver. Doesn't operate that well. Not just getting up on press, but really taking over and forcing the safety and cornerback to work in combination with him. I think he does need a tight end to his side of the field to really be as successful as necessary. His body type speaks to him being an X, but I think that Z position more valid for what he offers from a skill set aspect. My number 32 guy is a guy who's a local product. I really like this kid's game. Much like Antoine Goodley, this is the type of guy who will go out and block for you, will play football as aggressively as possible for you. And that is Andre Davis out of USF. 6'1", 207 pounds. I think he's a seventh-round pick. Definitely put him on my team. Like I said, a guy who he actually does catch the ball pretty well, does allow it to get into his body more often than necessary, though. And I think from an overall standpoint, pretty maxed out. Reminds me when I watch him play of Mohamed Sanu. Sanu's a little bit bigger physically, but neither of them are really as smooth. They've got a little rigidness to their game, but they both seem like football players that want it and want to help their team win, which is a big-time thing in my estimation. I do, oddly enough, think that he does have the ability to affect the defense and could play an X receiver position if necessary. The style of play that he offers that up, though, even though his physical ability is more of a fourth option. My number 33 guy is Deion Long out of Maryland. 6 foot, about 185 pounds. Seventh round pick, this senior. I think he has a pretty smooth game. Not going to ever be a burner or anything like that. A guy who he's pretty natural and smooth. He just doesn't have great blazing speed, doesn't have great size, but he does catch the ball well, and he's a good third down threat, which is necessary for you. Reminds me of Lance Moore, his game, the way that he plays. Neither are really overly explosive guys, but they seem to get open, especially for big third down catches. To me, he would operate best in the slot, allowing his route running ability and the fact that he is able to manipulate in the short area of the field, the opposition. So that's why I think Deion Long is going to be successful on the next level, especially if he's afforded the opportunity to play in the slot. Kaysen Williams is my number 34 guy out of Washington. 6'2", about 220 pounds. He's a seventh-round pick in my estimation as well. A guy who, you know, I'm a big fan of Kaysen Williams and what he has to offer. I think that Kaysen Williams, it seems like he has these lapses where he just disappears. And it doesn't mean that he doesn't understand what's going on in the game. He just removes himself from the game sometimes. And maybe it's him trying to be a team player. You know, he's going to go block downfield. He's going to do different things. It seems like he doesn't end the situation. Some guys do. And it's not meant to be an insult. It's just he doesn't demand that you get him all. He doesn't demand that he be the option. That's why I would have him on my team. I know he is a guy who would be more of an interior receiver, that fourth option, a guy who would be good third downs because he'll catch the ball, but it's not like he looks to take over a game. I'm seeing him on film. I've seen quite a few of his games. That seems to be the outlook for him. My number 35 pick is Kenny Bell, wide receiver out of Nebraska. The senior is 6'1", 185. Ran a pretty blazing time of 4 at the combine. Now, Bell seems like a guy who he is able to affect the defense. He's able to turn his hips, gets him off base once in a while, but it's not from his supreme running. It's more from his physical tools that are offered. Weakness to his game is the fact that it seems like he only has average returns on what he offers on the field. And if you're not able to make the defense make adjustments to you as a wide receiver, I've never seen him really make the defense make adjustments. For a guy with that much speed, you know, that's kind of a red flag in my opinion. Again, Emory comparison on this one, DeVere Posey, pretty good one. Similarly, I didn't understand why he went so early in the draft. He never really made the defense turn, made them really be affected by him, even though he had pretty good physical ability. Another fourth option receiver, in my opinion. Jamion Lewis is my number 36 wide receiver out of Mississippi State. You know, he's undersized of a running back build at 5'8", 185 pounds. Sixth round pick, in my opinion, as well. Now, another guy who will go out there and give you some fight, he actually does run the comeback route, seems to be his best route that he runs. Doesn't run in-breaking routes that well, and it's not for lack of wanting to go in there and mix it up. It's just that that doesn't seem to be his thing. More of a specialist on the return side, he just doesn't have the smooth movements for the wide receiver position. Reminds me of Andre Roberts from the Cardinals and the Redskins. Another fourth option wide receiver. Probably help out more in the return game as a kick returner, as it may be. 37th receiver is Chris Conley out of Georgia. 6'2", 207 pounds. Another blazing fast guy. High 4.3s in this guy. Chris Conley is a guy who makes the amazing catch, but doesn't make the basic catch consistently. Another guy who reminds me of Martavis Bryant. If I had to make a comparison to him, because his hands, he's got some pretty strong hands, but it's just the consistency for this kid really what bothers me and puzzles me for the particular scenario as it may be. Out of Fordham, 5'11", 197 pounds, seventh round pick in my opinion. A guy who does run pretty well in his routes. The quickness and the ability to affect the defense is something that he can definitely offer up for an NFL roster. Now, I just don't see the effectiveness of his game isn't to the same level as his teammate. His teammate seems to really affect the defense. He seems more polished of a guy. Jones Jr. seems like a guy who he's learned the position quite well, but it doesn't seem to translate to him being able to take over games. And he does have pretty good athleticism. Compare him to this guy because I think that he could have a long career, especially if he played that Z or even in the slot. And that's Harry Douglas out of formerly of the Falcons. Now he's a free agent. Compared favorably to him. It's a good thing to be compared to that guy because that guy is a guy who really does change what a defense has to offer against him because he, much like a Lance Moore, those are guys that will get you third down catches. If you're number one or two receivers out, they can fill in and really have some big seasons. Here's a guy who's pretty much not on anyone else's list, but I like him. I think if a guy can be a sleeper guy to rise up, undrafted free agent type guy, or even a seventh-round pick, it'd be this guy that's Keenan Lowe out of Oregon. He's my number 39 wide receiver of guys who I've seen enough on to feel comfortable talking about him. He's 5'9", 186. He's just pure tenacity, a guy who special teams, he'll make hits, he blocks, he'll take a big hit. Negative is the level of consistency of his play at the wide receiver position is not favorable to him being able to play it on the next level. He's got to develop more of that game and a feel for the game, but the love and the effort are definitely there. When I watch him play, he seems like a less talented version, and I'm sure that he would not be upset about this, a less talented version of Steve Smith from the Panthers and the Ravens, a guy who just wants to play, period. No matter where it is, what he's doing. My number 40 wide receiver is Austin Hill out Arizona, 6'2", 210 pounds. Austin Hill to me is a guy who is a space eater as a wide receiver. And this is why I don't have an NFL comparison that I really saw when I looked at him. If I can kind of set the scenario for you, physically 6'2", 210, 215 pounds, never really gets the DB to flip his hips, really drives through his routes completely. When the ball gets there, he makes the catch, but he's often contested because he doesn't have great, he doesn't have anything that makes the DB get lost. So if he's open in a zone, he'll make the catch and he'll get some yards, but he doesn't make the DB adjust to him. And on the next level, guys aren't going to just leave you open in the zone consistently. So that's why he's pretty low on my list compared to some other guys. More of a number four option, a guy who you put down there, out there on third downs because you'll probably see some zones. He might be able to find his way in a zone and make a catch. He'll catch the ball if he comes near him. That's not the problem. It's getting open. That's the issue. Number 41 receiver is a guy who I'm actually a pretty decent fan of, and I think that he could improve his game but at the wide receiver position, but I think that his impact will be seen on the special team side of the ball. Spencer out of Ohio State, 6'2", 208 pounds. He's a seventh-round guy, in my opinion. Like I said, he'll catch the ball. He actually has some pretty soft hands, makes good adjustments to the ball. Getting open is an issue with Evan Spencer, and that's not going to bode well for you on the next level for a consistent basis. That's why I have him as a fourth option. And he reminds me of a guy who's made a heck of a career out of being a special team maniac, and that's Matthew Slater from the Patriots. And my final receiver that I ranked, Chris Harper out of Cal, number 42 wide receiver. He's the last one, 5'11", 176 pounds. Harper is a guy who doesn't get open, actually. The negative that I have to say about Harper, if I had to say one, is more on the physical side, not as physical in nature, a pretty solid route runner. One of those guys who can really change what the defense is doing underneath, at least. That's why I have him rated as a slot receiver. Can make them effectively, make DBs effectively change their hips, change direction. Like I said, just not physically imposing enough to be on the exterior. Will probably run mostly outbreaking routes or intermediate routes, nothing short in breaking. So those are my wide receivers that I've ranked this particular year. Here's some guys who I just didn't have enough on them to really make an assessment. I'll list them all. Willie Tucker out of Cal Poly. Michael Johnson out of Delaware. Kenny Cook out of Gardner-Webb. Dontella Luckett out of Harding, who was actually at the NFL draft, ran pretty good time. Davis out of Henderson State. Drew Carswell out of Indiana, PA. Out of Lafayette, R.J. Harris out of New Hampshire, Addison Richards out of Regina, Stephon Barnett out of Richmond, DeAndre Carter out of Sacramento State, name probably sounds familiar for a reason, folks, just think about it, Trevor Harmon out of Shippensburg, who some people I've talked to are really high on. I just have not seen anything from them. Vernon Johnson out of Texas A&M Commerce. Jaquel Pitts out of Trinity International. John Beard out of Washburn. Anthony Johnson out of West Texas A&M. And Jake Kumerow out of Wisconsin Whitewater. Only one receiver that I've seen that just does not have the consistency level to really play on the next league, in the next stage, I should say, and that's Quentin Dunbar out of Florida. Such inconsistency in the route running and the effort towards the ball. It's just difficult for me to I've seen quite a bit. I've actually seen 15 games of footage with Quentin Dunbar when assessing other players, and it's just not there. Moving on to the tight ends, then we're going to move into that mock draft, folks. And remember, if you want to be part of the show, that call-in number is 323-637-3776. 657-1489. That's 323-657-1489. Now, the tight end position, I don't go as in-depth with some of the information just because, you know, I'm a wide receiver by trade. So I know quite a bit about it. That's what I focus on, and that's what I really do. So without further ado, I'm going to talk about the tight ends. Like I said, I'm going to give you my ranking, strength and weakness, a comparison, and then their best fit for success on the next level. Doesn't mean that they can't play something else. It just means this is where I think that they'll be most successful. My number one tight end is Nick O'Leary out of Florida State. This senior is 6'3", 247 pounds. Now, his strength. Nick O'Leary seems to always get open. He feels out the zone very well. He actually has really soft hands for catching the ball, and he's an adequate blocker. Now, he's pretty stiff with his movements, and he's not overly athletic, so he won't stretch out a defense. He'll be more of a zone buster than a guy who will beat man coverage. He's my number one tight end because this tight end class, to me, doesn't have a standout athlete. He, to me, is the best overall ability guy, not just talent, but understanding of the game, movements, and skills. That's why I compare him to Dallas Clark, a guy who also was not overly athletic, but understood the game. It was really a zone buster. I think his best fit is H-back, but he can play inline tight end in certain schemes. Run-heavy schemes, probably not. Doesn't really have the physical girth, but his blocking is adequate enough to do it in certain systems. My number two tight end is Max Williams out of Minnesota. This sophomore has second-round ability. So did Nick O'Leary. 6'4", 250 pounds. Now, his strength is that he is a matchup issue against teams because he does have more physical ability than Nick O'Leary. His weakness is that, and he actually is a willing blocker as well. His weakness is that he still doesn't understand the little nuances of the game, playing the position. Not really the best blocker due to that. And I think that he'll probably work better as an option as a pass-catching tight end than anything else. My NFL comparison is Owen Daniels, a guy who does find himself getting open due to physical ability more than anything else. My number three guy is Ben Koyak out of Notre Dame. Notre Dame's been putting out a few tight ends over the last few years. Tyler Eifert, before that, Kyle Rudolph, guys who have just been pretty doggone good in the NFL and definitely were in college. Now, his strength is that he is a great blocker and he understands proper pad level, hand placement, and the things that are necessary. He's also a pretty good pass catcher. Now, his negative is that he is not physically imposing by any means in the passing game. Not a guy who will be able to line up on the exterior and really challenge the defense. He's going to have to stay in line, in my opinion, and that's where I have him. My number four tight end is Clyde Walford out of Miami. 6'4", 255 pounds. He's a third-round talent, in my opinion. Now, he is better than giving credit for a blocker. He's a good reach blocker, can actually do what's necessary, sliding, getting to the second level on run blocking. He's also a decent pass catcher. Now, the negative that goes along with this guy is that he's unrefined in his route running. Doesn't really pose that threat yet. As he becomes more comfortable with the position, he probably does have the upside to be the best tight end of any of the four I've listed. But at this point, he's not really that guy. More of a guy who's going to be a threat leaking out, especially on play action plays or things like that, than anything else. NFL comparison is Jeff Cumberland, an adequate receiver who also is an above-average blocker. I think that he is more of an inline tight end. He does have the opportunity to flex out, but he needs to become more comfortable being in that situation. My number five tight end is Blake Bell out of Oklahoma. This former quarterback who's converted to tight end really does use that portion of the game and his understanding of what should be done by a tight end from that perspective to his advantage. He's a huge guy at 6'6", 265 pounds, and I think he has third-round talent. Now, the strength of Blake Bell is that he has really adjusted to blocking, being a functional blocker, and pass catching. The negative that goes along with it is he's still really raw. You can see that he's thinking at some points on the field, and his motions are a little slower than they need to be. I think he is an inline tight end, has the ability to do that. And my NFL comparison is a guy who also is kind of a dancing bear at some points, Mercedes Lewis. My number six tight end is Tyler Croft out of Rutgers. This early entry junior, 6'5", 240 pounds. I think he's got a fourth round talent. Now, his strength is that he's probably the best pass catcher of any of the guys that I've listed. Nick O'Leary had probably the best understanding of how to get in and out of breaks and in and out of zones, I should say, and function in that capacity. But you look at this guy and you say, wow, Croft is really a pass catcher. His weakness is that he is, I'm not going to say disinterested in blocking, is just not his forte. Doesn't seem to be very strong at the point of attack when trying to block. I compare him to Luke Wilson from the Seattle Seahawks. I think he needs to be more of a flex guy than anything, maybe even an H-back, but the flex position would probably be best for him because he is a threat in the passing game. Gerald Christian is my number seven tight end out of Louisville. This senior is 6'2", 242 pounds. Pretty good blocker, actually. I think that he does have the opportunity to play as an inline tight end if a team needs him there. His weakness is the fact that he is not as comfortable as he possibly should be as a pass catcher. His size would say that he's more the H-back type, but you see the development mentally happening with him from a pass catching standpoint, the level of comfort. To me, he reminds me of a little bit of Delanie Walker when he's with the 49ers, kind of a raw player who has developed into his own with Tennessee a little bit better than I thought he would. Number eight guy is Jesse James out of Penn State, 6'7", 255 pounds, fifth round ability in my opinion. Now, the thing with Jesse James is that he's going to block for you, he's going to make contact, and he's going to be physically strong at that point of contact. The negative that goes along with him is that he does have he doesn't really get in and out of breaking his routes. He's a guy who will push down the field and use his size. He really doesn't do well with in or out breaking routes, more of a guy who will run seams for you because of this. NFL comparison, and this is something that Emory brought to my attention, Kellen Davis, another guy who's fairly stiff in his motions, doesn't really have that ability to affect the opposition who's man-on-man with him because of that. Another guy, CJ Uzomah, out of Auburn. This senior, 6'5", 262 pounds, think he's a sixth-round talent. Strength, he is a pass-catching tight end who also does well on pulling plays and things like that when he needs to fill in holes. Weakness is that he is not a blocking tight end. Will not be playing in line at this point. He is just physically a pass-catching threat. Reminds me of Ben Watson. You know, physically got some speed to his game, athleticism, more than being a blocking tight end. So that's why I have him as a flex or even an H-back, but likely a flex tight end. EJ Bibbs is number two on my list. Out of Iowa State, a guy who I had ranked pretty highly last year, didn't really evolve in his senior season. 6'3", 261 pounds, sixth round talent in my opinion. Now, what I like about him is the fact that he does catch the ball very well. He puts stress and strain on the opposition. The weakness is that he has regressed as a blocker. 2 years ago, I actually thought he was a pretty solid blocker. Seemed, I don't want to say disinterested, but seemed not to really be a blocking type this past season. Larry Donnell is a good comparison because they both, you never want to say a guy's not giving an effort, but you just see that it's a different level of aggressiveness that they have when being a pass catcher versus being a blocker in the run game. My number 11 guy is Jeff Hiraman out of Ohio State, 6'5", 255 pounds. Think he's a seventh-round guy. Now, what I like about him is that he does understand about blocking. He can pull block. He can block at the point of attack. He can even climb to the next level and block, can reach block. It seems like he is an average pass catcher. Doesn't really have the ability to affect the defense in that portion of the game. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist, just not his strength. NFL comparison is Zach Miller, and I think that he will be successful as an inline tight end, but he's more likely a backup at that position just because of what he physically offers from a strength perspective. And my last tight end I'm going to assess this week is Wes Sexton out of South Alabama. Senior, 6'4", 245 pounds. He's a seventh rounder, in my opinion. Former wide receiver, so he does understand how to be a good pass catcher. Fairly good route runner. It's not spectacular. You would expect that he'd be a little better as wide receiver, but I think that's part of the reason he's tight end. Weakness is that he is not the best blocker, something that's still to be developed. Reminds me of Jacob Tammy with how he functions. I think that he's definitely more of an A-back, in my opinion, on this level. Here's some tight ends, though, that I still am not familiar enough with, but I want to still mention a guy who Emory did a special on, James O'Shaughnessy, out of Illinois State, 6'4", 245 pounds senior. Let's see, Will Ty out of Stony Brook. Jeff LePack out of Eastern Illinois. Used to play with Jimmy Garoppolo. Nick Boyle out of Delaware. John Sifrin out of Massachusetts. And then Dan Light out of Fordham. Like I said, looked at the receivers from Fordham. Able to make more of an assessment. Didn't really get a feel for Dan Light, but wanted to mention his name. Seems to have pretty good physical ability. As I have more on those guys, I will incorporate them into my assessments. So we're going to move on to this mock draft. Now, the mock draft order stayed the same except for one tweak. I now have the Seattle Seahawks 31 and New England at 32 because my last mock draft was done before the Bowl. And I'm going to give you the rules of engagement. Number one rule. This is based on assessments of the team's needs from my point of view, as if I were the GM. I use full functionality of understanding of cap space, the coaching, the schemes, things like that, to try to make assessments as well. Number two, these are based on my rankings. If I think a guy is the top whatever and the general consensus is he's number 15, I don't care. I rank these guys in certain places because I think that they have talent to play the next level at that level. So I think you're around pick, or the general consensus, I should say, is you're the sixth. My mock draft, you're going in the first round. Just deal with it. And then this is not indicative of where I think guys are going to go. My final draft, when I do my final mock draft, I will have a double-layered draft where I do my picks, and then I kind of give an assessment of what I think will happen with said teams. I also have trades in there, things like that. For now, this is pretty standard and static as we still work through players being franchised, players being signed, and also things like that as we get close to the draft. Without further ado, this is my mock draft 2.0 for day, March 5th, 2015. The first overall pick is by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers go with Jameis Winston, quarterback out of Florida State. You know, there's been a lot of talk about what this kid has to offer and his off-the-field issues. And I kind of went over that earlier when I stated that I have to use what he does on the is my ultimate decision maker because I don't have the chance to interview some of these guys. I'm willing to take a $22 million hit on a guy who has Super Bowl quarterback champ talent more than anything else. The Bucs currently sit with $34 million in cap room. My number two overall pick, Tennessee Titans, select Leonard Williams out of USC, defensive tackle. This junior could play the nose, the shade, the five technique, Titans. He can do whatever is necessary. And Ken Whitson-Hunt's defense. This is a 3-4 zone defense. They have Lebeau there as the assistant and a defensive, not coordinated with the defensive overseer. He'll have some influence on that. They have $47 million in cap space right now, 47.7. Number three pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Remember, those first two picks were the same picks I had from last draft, but this is where it starts to change. Jacksonville selects Dante Fowler Jr. out of Florida. This D end slash outside linebacker is a junior. You know, pressure helped struggling secondary, and the Jaguars secondary definitely struggled. They played better as the season went along. But here's what I think is going to happen for Gus Bradley's defense. He wants to get an active front going at the opposition. They have $68.9 million in cap room. Don't be surprised if they make a run at a guy like Nkonsue to have an active front next to Derek Marks. Have two D tackles who really can't get after the quarterback. And then you have a guy like Dante Fowler Jr. He's no longer the focus when you have him playing next to a guy like Sue. So Dante Fowler used that physical ability even all of the way and all out of sorts to be an active force. My number four pick for Oakland, wide receiver Amari Cooper out of Alabama. You know, he's better than any wide receiver option on the roster and true X position receiver. Allows guys like James Jones to bump down to a more natural Z position, Holmes to play the number four position, Denarius Moore to play in the slot, things that are more natural for these guys. And they have a huge amount of cap room as well, $58.8 million for Jack Del Rio's squad. Number five pick for Washington. I went with Vic Beasley out of Clemson, out of linebacker. He's a senior. You know, they likely won't re-sign Brian Arakpo to a long-term deal. So even if they do at this point, but no matter what they do with him, I don't think that he's going to be a long-term option on this team. They only have $26.8 million, which they've already reached the floor. Now it's just signing players who fit what they want. Getting Vic Beasley in the fold, you know, Trent you brought in there last year. He'll play on the left side behind a guy like Brian Kerrigan, and you'll get a guy who's a true Russian from the right side, Vic Beasley. Number six pick, the New York Jets. I haven't taken Marcus Mariota here. Reason being, you know, the level of cap space for this team, which is $53 million, and lack of production of Geno Smith causes this move for me. You know, I lose much of nothing here if it doesn't pan out the way that it might want to pan out. Because remember, we're not paying Geno Smith to Tyler. He wasn't a top 10 pick. He was the 39th overall pick, I believe, in the second round. So I bring in another quarterback at this point. When Geno's contract is up, Marcus Mariota's still not getting a huge amount of money. I can figure out what I want to do at that point. If I want to deal Mariota, if I want to not bring back this kid, and there's nothing wrong with bringing in competition at the most important position on the offense in the NFL. Number seven pick, the Chicago Bears. They're going to take Kevin White out of West Virginia. If I'm the GM here, I know that we've already made talks and are trying to deal Brandon Marshall. I'm taking those very seriously. You know, now I'll have Kevin White. He will not have to be the focus like he would be on some other teams because you'll have Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett at tight end, Forte in the backfield, and hopefully Cutler either learns how to play a little bit better this year or they'll figure something else out. But Kevin White at least gives them another option so that not everything's on Alshon Jeffrey's shoulders. They have $28 million that they're under the cap currently. Eighth overall pick, the Atlanta Falcons. Alvin Dupree out of Kentucky, DN. You know, a change in defensive scheme calls for a more talented edge rusher. Played kind of the 3-4-4-3 hybrid last year. Then with Dan Quinn coming in, they're going to play more 4-3 this year. They do need to get stronger at the D-tackle position, but there's not a guy who really fits with Leonard Williams being off the board what they might want to do. This new defense, and they have $33.8 million of cap room. Number nine pick, the New York Giants take Lyle Collins out of LSU. Off the tackle, you know, he can play the left guard or left tackle. Both positions can definitely use a challenge. You know, Will Beatty played decent football last year, but that left guard was pretty putrid in the style of play that they had. That's why Eli was on his back more often than not. And this team actually franchised Jason Pierre-Paul, so they took care of some of those defensive needs, especially at the rush end, and they have $13 million of cap room, so they can't really go out in free agency and go get a top offensive lineman. Bringing one in through the draft might be the best move. 10th pick, St. Louis, Devontae Parker out of Louisville, wide receiver. You know, with both quarterbacks going off the board, I don't feel comfortable taking another one. You know, Sam Bradford, we're going to let him go look, make some decisions, but we can at least get this talent in, get this stocked up, and figure out what to do about the quarterback next season as I try to build off of situations. Once Bradford comes off of my cap next year, then I can make some deals, maybe get one in free agency, because right now we're only $9 million under cap. Number 11, Minnesota Vikings take Andres Pete out of Stanford, offensive tackle. Now I sit here and I say, you know, we have Phil Loholt. You know, we drafted Matt Khalil a couple of years ago, third overall pick. Khalil doesn't seem to be playing the caliber of football we had hoped for. So I go with a guy who can come in and do that. Plus, I don't know if I'll be able to bring Phil Loholt back next year. So I'm looking for the future. $28 million under the cap right now. Decisions to be made. And with running backs floating out there in free agency and the possible loss of Adrian Peterson, I know that I need to be stronger on the offensive line. DeMarco Murray might be a good option. Why not bring in someone who's athletic to play in front of him? 12th overall pick, the Cleveland Browns. I'm taking Randy Gregory out of Nebraska. Edge rush, edge rush, edge rush. I wanted to get a wide receiver, but the top three guys are gone off the board at this point. I look at who's left, and I say, I'm going to get a guy who can come in, and now I can have a rotation with him, Bark Mingo, coming off that right side. And on the left side, I have Jabal Sheard and Paul Kruger to hold up against the run and also be active. Cleveland wants to play defense hard nose and win with very conservative offense. Let's see if we can do that. Plus, we can go in free agency and do some things on the offensive side of the ball because we're $54 million cap. We did not franchise Jordan Cameron. We're going to let him go look around. But there's other guys who are floating out there at the tight end position that we can go grab, like a Julius Thomas. 13th overall pick, the New Orleans Saints. Going off the norm, I'm going with a guy who can be a mainstay on that defensive line for years to come. Danny Shelton out of Washington. A feast mode, he's been dubbed. Nose tackle. Guy who can come in there, strong punch. He can be what the New Orleans Saints need to stop the run. A guy who can eat up both guards and the center at certain positions, at certain points in time because of how strong he is at the point of attack. New Orleans sits there $14 million over the cap right now. They're going to be eliminating positions. Project Bunkley is going to probably be cut, guys like that, as they try to get under the cap. So do something about that defensive line, make things easier for him, getting Danny Shelton. 14th pick, Miami Dolphins pick Trey Wayans out of Michigan State, cornerback. It's pretty easy here. They're $12 million under the cap. They need better play at corner opposite of Brent Grimes, and they've taken care of the offensive side of the ball by franchising Charles Clay. I think that this kid and Trey Wayans can be a great corner, and they can have lockdown scenarios happening there with him and Grimes. 15th pick, the San Francisco 49ers go with Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, offensive tackle slash guard. Jim Tomsula is the new coach, only $6.9 million under the cap. They're in cap trouble, cap hell. They're probably going to have to get rid of Mike Iupati, not be able to sign him back. So why not replace him with Scherff, who can come in and play and start on that line immediately. Number 16 pick. The Houston Texans take Landon Collins out of Alabama. This early entry junior is a guy who flies around and makes big plays happen. He's more of a strong safety, but he can play combo. Think that he would be a perfect fit for the Houston Texans organization that has given up more big plays in the passing game than anyone over the last three seasons and giving them an opportunity to actually shut something down. $21 million under the cap. They can spend that on the offensive side of the ball, and they're probably going to get some savings from Andre Johnson leaving the organization pretty soon. They're probably going to release him. Number 17, the San Diego Chargers. I select Eric Flowers out of Miami, offensive tackle. Again, King Dunlap is a certain age, and DJ Fluker has proven to be ineffective. $30 million under the cap. I think that some moves can be made for Mike McCoy's bunch. And Flowers, with his athleticism, is definitely a pick that can work out long term. 18th pick, Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going with Jalen Strong here out of Arizona State, wide receiver. Not going to bring back Dwayne Bowe. We have severe cap issues. We just franchised Justin Houston. Like I said, Bowe's going to have a huge cap number. I think it's going to be like $14 million or something crazy. So why not replace him with a guy who wants to be in there? Be honest. Like I said, the three top receivers are the top receivers from a physical and production standpoint. But this kid by himself is the number four. He's the clear-cut number four, in my opinion. And he can be effective for this Kansas City roster. Number 19, the Buffalo Bills traded this pick to Cleveland for Sammy Watkins. So Cleveland selecting at 19. And I go with Devin Funches out of Michigan, the wide receiver. You know, he's not a finished product at this point. Like I said last when I seen him. But what he offers is physical ability and he's a matchup issue. So if new quarterback Josh McCown gets in trouble, he can throw the ball to Funches. Funches does high point the ball very well and can be a problem for the opposition. Number 20, the Philadelphia Eagles picking here. Because of the movement that's been made, I personally think they'll probably go a little later in the draft, but if I'm picking, I think this guy fits the offense and what we need to do in Philadelphia. That's Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin. One cut runner, gets the ball, gets up the doggone field, be very effective in a particular scheme. We're $50 million under the cap anyway. We did not re-sign Jeremy Maclin via franchise tag. I think that Melvin Gordon also will fit Chip Kelly's mindset of what he wants. He does not want a player that he wants more of a guy who focuses on the overall aspect of the team than self, and that's not calling Shady McCoy selfish, just saying how I think Chip Kelly operates. 21st pick, Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going with Malcolm Brown here out of Texas, the defense tackle. Very strong at the point of attack. You pair him next to Geno Atkins, who's finally back to being healthy, and you let Devin Steele play as the number three defensive tackle, coming in rotation, especially in pass rushing situations, and this can be a force up front. Your interior will be set. You're $41 million under cap, so you can actually address things like possibly being a guy like Randall Cobb, play opposite of A.J. Green, and that defense is going to be as strong as ever if you bring in a guy like Malcolm Brown. 22nd overall pick, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I bring in another crazy linebacker who's got a nasty intentions and gets after the quarterback, and that's Christian Ray from Missouri. This early entry junior will be replacing Jason Worrells, who's probably out the door. $8 million under the cap currently. That's not a lot of money to go after big-time players. Shane Ray would fit very well with this organization. 23rd pick, the Detroit Lions. I'm keeping him with Eddie Goldman out of FSU. Defensive tackle. Remember, I said they're not going to be able to keep Sue and Fairley. Fairley's the lower cap hit. Sue was going to get $27 million if they franchised him, so they didn't. They're $19 million under the cap, which is a workable number right now. Brandon Goldman would be pretty good for the scheme that's been set up by Jim Caldwell. 24th pick, Arizona. I would pick Brett Huntley out of UCLA, quarterback. Lots of talk about Garrett Grayson and Bryce Petty. I say it like this. I saw him play well enough behind a horrible offensive line the first half of the season and then play better football when they finally started blocking for him. You give him the talent that they have in Arizona. Again, Carson Palmer, if he checks out medically, maybe I don't make the selection. I doubt he does. Once nerve issues start popping up, you're probably done. So bringing him into the fold would be great. $15 million under the cap, so I think things would hold pretty firm. And Brett Huntley may just be our future. 25th pick, Carolina Panthers. I'm going with T.J. Clemmons out of Pittsburgh, the offensive tackle. Big, strong guy who's got some quality feet to him, got a block for Cam Newton. Period. They just didn't. I mean, they did not take care of the franchise quarterback the way that they should have. Didn't block for him. Didn't give him many receiving options this year, and they did an okay job, made it to the playoffs. Being $16.8 million under the cap, that's not a lot to work with in free agency. That's just a maintain number. Number 26 pick, the Baltimore Ravens have it, the pick that I had from last time. If I was a GM, I look at what I have on my roster. I know that I need stuff, but this just makes sense to me. I'm going with Todd Gurley out of Georgia. You can redshirt him this year. You know he's going to be effective when he comes back. He'll probably shed a little weight, get a little quicker, a la Le'Veon Bell and what he did. And you have Justin Forsett, Bernard Pierce, guys who I don't think are long-term solutions, but in the short term, work very well until you get back to good with your running game with this guy and Todd Gurley in the 2016 season. 27th pick, the Dallas Cowboys are here. And I thought about going with the running back, but I think in free agency they're going to really attack Adrian Peterson, offer him money, and figure things out from there. With the two running backs that I thought were possible to go here, they probably will address it in the second or third round, but you got to go with the best player available. I think Carl Davis, the defensive tackle out of Iowa, would fit very well in here. They had Tyron Crawford playing at defensive tackle. He just was not that. He was a DN. They just needed really to have someone who would come in and fill against the run, and this guy can do it. I really did consider T.J. Yeldon at this pick, though. They re-signed Dez Bryant via the franchise tag, did not with DeMarco Murray. Let's see how it plays out. 28th pick, the Denver Broncos are here, and I didn't change it. Max Williams out of Minnesota, tight end, same thing. Julius Thomas, told you he would not get the franchise tag. But when I talked to you all last time about the draft, and he did not get the franchise tag, they have $21 million currently to work with, probably going to be a higher number pretty soon. Peyton Manning took a pay cut. They're probably not done making adjustments. Didn't sign back Raheem Moore. So go with Max Williams, a guy who can be groomed into the next big-time receiving threat at tight end. 29th overall pick, the Indianapolis Colts are picking here. Last time I had him taking, I believe, Melvin Gordon. This time I have him taking Cameron Irving out of FSU, who come in and play center. I think that you now give Andrew Luck everything that is necessary to be successful. He's got wide receivers. He's got tight ends. They'll likely sign a running back in free agency. C.J. Spiller, alert. And then you give him a center who can also play at the tackle position and play at a high level, in my opinion. And they have quite a bit of cap room with $43 million. 30th pick, the Green Bay Packers are picking here. And I have them taking a guy who will take over for the defense signal caller, and that's Denzel Perryman, my number one inside linebacker, has been for two seasons in a row out of Miami. This junior is just a guy who really gets the job done. The Green Bay Packers are looking to make some moves. You can see that by them not franchising Randall Cobb. They wanted to give him about $8 million. He wanted closer to $11 and they're $33 million under the cap. McCarthy and company might make some moves, but Denzel Perryman can come in and solidify that defense and make it a force again. 31st pick, the Seattle Seahawks are picking here. I haven't taken Marcus Peters out of Washington. They're going to lose corners over the next few years. Last year, they lost Brandon Browner. This year, they lose Byron Maxwell to free agency, likely going to Philly if he gets his opportunity. They're $26 million under the cap. You know that they're saving that up for next season when they can offer it to Russell Wilson. Peters comes in another long corner. He's got some issues off the field that he's gone through, but guess what? Peters will fit in nicely here. Remember, Pete Carroll, king red flag for players, and he takes care of them pretty well. My number 32 pick here for the New England Patriots, I'm going with Jordan Phillips, the big boy out of Oklahoma. They just lost out on Vince Wilfork. Sad day for them. They probably won't sign back Devin McCourty. May be able to do some dealing with Darrelle Revis, excuse me, folks. They did franchise Stephen Gostkowski. And remember, they're $4 million over the cap. Some of that is dead money that they might be able to eliminate. So I think that you end up taking care of Jordan Phillips, figuring out how you can make adjustments and make moves to get under the cap, which I think they'll be pretty fine with. And they may make a move to go after Andre Johnson because they'll be able to eliminate some of that money that they're over the cap for. And then the last pick in this draft, the 50th overall pick, the Buffalo Bills, did not have a first-round pick. Last time I had them going with a safety, this time I have them going with Danielle Hunter out of LSU, coming and play outside linebacker. You know, Rex Ryan wants to bring pressure on a consistent basis, and I'll give him someone to do that with. You know, this also fits due to the fact that they might not be able to franchise, they did not franchise Jerry Hughes, might not be able to resign him back. They only have $18 million that they're under the cap with some moves that they still need to make. They just signed Matt Cassel. So this makes sense to bring in a guy who's active. And even though Hunter is not a guy who I can lean on as a consistent rush in, especially in the 4-3, because he doesn't have consistent rip moves, secondary moves, coming off the edge and literally just having to rush the passer is his strength, a la Alden Smith. Not as strong, but much quicker than Smith. And I think that he will work well in this defense that Rex Ryan is going to bring. So that's my version 2.0 mock draft, folks. Remember, if you ever want to be part of the show, call the number is 323-657-1489. That's 323-657-1489. I want to thank caller for calling in earlier. Always great to have people who want to come on the show and be a part of it. Next week, I am going to finish out the offensive side of the ball with a line, and I'm also going to start on the defensive side of the ball with the defensive line. I'm going to take care of the line positions, if possible, on the next show. Definitely get the offensive line knocked out. Try to get the defensive line as well. If you want to ask me questions, you can hit me up on Twitter. The handle is CJFlorida9. That's CJ Florida, the state, and then the number 9. You can hit up Emery at FBallGamePlan on Twitter. Gene at Gene Clements. So for the Football Game Plan Radio Network, folks, this is Chris James signing off. Enjoy your weekend as we start to get down to the nitty-gritty. Combine is over. Pro days have started. We'll start to see more things shake out, more guys develop into your future NFL teams or future favorite NFL teams players. I'll be at some of these pro days coming up. I'll let you know the schedule as we get it. Take care and have fun, folks.